It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, editor-at-large at Search ERP, with my colleagues Brian McKenna, business applications editor at Computer Weekly, and Jim O'Donnell, news editor at Search ERP. SAP launched a new effort to entice customers to S/4HANA Cloud, the SaaS version of its newest ERP platform. But are customers ready to rise with SAP? We'll discuss the new cloud migration service, dig into the cloud numbers in SAP's recent earnings report, and compare Oracle's cloud efforts. In the final segment, Holger Mueller of Constellation Research gives his take on the SAP news. Brian and Jim, we went to the event towards the end of last month in which SAP announced RISE with SAP. You know, it seems like a fairly major effort to not only move people to the cloud, but move people to S/4HANA Cloud specifically. We've both done some coverage on that. Any thoughts about what this is going to mean for the customers?
First impressions, I mean, as you said, Dave, they came out with it, about 3 weeks ago now. And, they've become quite adept at these sort of launch virtual presentations. So Christian Klein came out and he's the sole CEO of SAP right now. And, it seems like it's sort of Christian Klein putting his stamp more on the company now. And from what I understand is the whole RISE program came about from strategy meetings that they had last summer of 2020. When Christian Klein became, the sole CEO a few months after that. And they kind of got everyone together and started getting a lot of input from their customers, from what I was told, that everyone sort of knew that they want to go to the intelligent enterprise. It's kind of just beyond sort of just moving to S/4HANA or moving to the cloud, but this concept of the intelligent enterprise as, an organization that uses, a lot more data for analysis and can extend the SAP applications into other applications and systems. It's a kind of a bigger picture than that in some ways, but what they figured out was customers really wanted to know how they were going to do this. So this was the response to that, like what are some of the ways? And they put it out as basically a three-step journey. The first part will be sort of a business process analysis and redesign, sort of looking at your existing system and analyzing what the business processes are, and kind of, sort of benchmarking them against, KPIs that you're setting, and then mapping those to what you're going to move to, the new systems. So that's the first part. And there's a little bit to that. I don't know if we had to get too deeply, but they acquired this company, Signavio, in the process, which does process mining and process analysis. So that'll be a big part of it. So that's the first part. And then the second part is sort of the technical migration onto, a standard platform using the business technology platform that they have. And then the third part is kind of building this intelligent enterprise based on that business technology platform around the core of S/4HANA. So that's where they're getting S/4HANA. And it is sort of cloud-based. And that's where you're able to take advantage of S/4HANA as that core, but also extend out into different parts of the SAP business network, SAP Ariba, if you need procurement, SAP Fieldglass, sort of those parts get brought into it, considered part of the intelligent enterprise, but also extending out to other applications, other systems. So it's kind of this three-step process is the main
thing. And it's a single contract, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, right. So you can use your whatever hyperscaler you want. You can use Microsoft Azure, AWS, Google, Alibaba, SAP HANA Enterprise Cloud, whatever you want. They are managing all that cloud sort of hyperscaler contract stuff. SAP will manage that. SAP will take sort of the burden of that. And they coined a term for it as business transformation as a service. So that's kind of what they're trying to push with that.
Yeah, that's the sales as a service, and it's business transformation as a service. I mean, here in the UK, the SAP UK and Ireland user group, I've mentioned a few times on this podcast. So their chair, Paul Cooper, when he welcomed it straight out of the gate. And at the back of his mind is some research that they did towards the end of last year, which found that something like 30% of at least the respondents to their survey among SAP customers had been delaying S/4HANA projects during the pandemic. So there's clearly a kind of pent-up demand to get on with it. RISE seems to offer the opportunity to do that. Another thing that's holding them back, though, according to the user group, is the skills shortage and the retirement of a lot of SAP managers and user organizations and things like that. So I don't know whether RISE can address that as well. And guys, isn't there a 20% it's 20% cheaper or something to do with things being 20% cheaper, which always sounds very attractive.
It does. And I actually asked Holger Mueller, the Constellation research analyst, about that. Remember, I'm going to play some excerpts from that interview at the end of this discussion. And I asked him about the 20%. Of course, the flip side, we care most about the customers of TechTarget and the users, but the flip side is always if it's a 20% discount, then that's probably 20% less revenue for the vendor. And I asked him about it from that perspective. And, you know, SAP has already said that they're going to make an investment in trying to transition people to the cloud. And like a lot of vendors with legacy systems, they expect to take a bit of a financial hit while they do that because the on-premises license revenue will begin to fade. But the usually SaaS monthly subscription revenue won't quite replace it for some period of time. So SAP is taking a bit of a hit to do that. Jim, you mentioned the intelligent enterprise and putting it in that broader context, which SAP also did. The three of us participated in the Q&A with the analyst and press community that happened shortly after the announcement of RISE. And Brian, you have been trying to put this in the context of Leonardo, which was certainly an important name in our world up until two to three years ago in the SAP world. And you actually asked Christian Klein, the CEO, a question related to Leonardo.
Yeah, the disappearance of Leonardo. I understand he's with Paris Saint-Germain as their director of football now. That's a joke that David didn't...
Yes, but I had an idea what you were getting at. But anyway...
Yeah, I did ask about this, to be serious. I did. Christian Klein took my question about how does this RISE compare and contrast with Leonardo. And one of the things he said was Leonardo had always been a little bit outside our applications, and that for SAP, the important thing is to do what they do in the context of customers' business processes. So that seemed to be a kind of a retrospective critique of the Leonardo approach, which always sounded very attractive to me. It was this kind of Bill McDermott concept of, and indeed Hassel Plattner concept of, Leonardo being a digital toolbox that could be a catalyst for digital transformation for your company. And it was basically a way of bundling together all of their kind of cool stuff, AI and whatnot, machine learning, which also RISE does seem to that does seem to be part of the value proposition.
Sure does.
I wanted to just say something about the way Christian Klein said a few times, I don't know if you guys noticed this, that he kept saying the technology is there. And he repeated this quite often, both in terms of the earnings results and the RISE announcement. So the technology is there. It's not about the technology. It's about customers being able to make the business case to their boards for this investment. And RISE is a way of enabling customers to make those business cases better.
Totally. I think that's a really good point. And I think that's where that whole the first step, I think for most companies, the first step of that process analysis is going to be a really key part of it. And the fact that they're sort of offering that as, it's not free because you have to pay for RISE, but you know, it's kind of this inclusive package that has that as a part of it, I think could really kind of help the companies make that case. Whereas I'm sure, these are really expensive. They're very complex. And in these times where it's, you really have to justify it, that's going to be one of the things that may make it more attractive.
So how important then is the Signavio acquisition to that?
Personally, I think it could be pretty key. I mean, I think, in order to do that, customers probably would have had to go on and get a Signavio, or a lot of them might have it anyway, because there's Signavio has been a growing company. There's also a process planning company called Solonis, which does similar things. And I think either one of them might have been a target for acquisition to do this, but Solonis has actually grown. They both have similar origins, as SAP kind of DNA throughout the companies. But Solonis has grown fairly significantly. So my understanding is that they were too expensive for SAP to acquire at this point.
Solonis has been very close to SAP, hasn't it?
They have been too, and Signavio as well. I mean, they both were started by, I believe, if they were not actual SAP employees, I think they came out of the Hassel Plattner Institute, which is sort of associated with SAP. It does a lot of research and academic work around the SAP systems.
To finish the thought about what Brian asked about the technology being there, it's been noted by Christian Klein himself, I think, but also by the industry analysts and press, that he's moving away from wanting to always talk about technologies and even products it seems, and talk about the so-called value proposition and what you can do with the systems. And it seems like RISE is geared that way too, as you've both been saying. Look at what you want to do with your business, and then SAP with their consulting wing or their system integrator partners will come in and try to make that happen and pick the technologies for you probably. It's hardly a new idea, really. TechTarget, we've been writing for years based on advice from analysts and consultants that you never want to start just with the technology. You don't want to just implement technology for technology's sake. So I don't mean to poo-poo this, because it does seem like a pretty, like you say, one contract, a pretty cohesive effort and a major push by SAP to help get customers to the cloud, and specifically S/4HANA Cloud.
Yeah, I think that's true, Dave. And I think it's really there is nothing really new here from a technology standpoint. It's all just sort of bundling things together that were out there. And I remember, you know, speaking with Joshua Greenbaum, who's an analyst that we've talked to quite a bit, who's followed this for a number of years. And he was just saying that it's just good that SAP has, it appears that they're actually really listening to their customers for once. And, you know, they're not trying to like push a Leonardo on you, which they may not want, but they're actually trying to do something about what their customers are really asking for at this point. That's what I've heard more than anything is that the opening reviews of RISE have been very positive from that point of view, that they are listening to customers. Everyone always says the devil is in the details of all this stuff. So whether or not it really takes off, it takes some time, but I think most people think it's a pretty good idea.
Jim, I think you mentioned that you got some customer feedback, at least indirectly, by talking to someone. I think it was Jeff Scott, head of the Americas SAP User Group, or ASUG. What was his take on it?
Sort of similar along what Brian had said about the DSAG and the European user groups. The early returns are pretty positive overall. He said, you know, that they've just put out a ASUG, which is, again, it's the Americas SAP User Group, does these pulse surveys every now and again. And, you know, their latest research says that within 2 to 3 years, I think 50% of SAP customers are already making plans for going to S/4HANA, or they're already live on it. So I think it might be something like 20 already live. So they said that the initiative is there. The desire by the customers is certainly there, but they did kind of need this program to figure out how they were going to do it. So I think that, you know, the initial response has been positive from that point of view. But he also kind of wanted to make clear that it's not going to be for everyone. And a customer might already have their hyperscaler strategy figured out. So they're not going to need this kind of, you know, SAP sort of taking the lead and taking the contract for that. They might just want to stick with on-premises. You can see, as he said, you know, you can still buy SAP software the old-fashioned way, just an old-fashioned, you know, licensed software. You know, the key point is it's offering an alternative that's good to have, but there's no compulsion to make the customers, you know, make them do it, basically. Mm-hmm. And it is, I did talk to another analyst, Andrew Bartels, who said that he thinks that it is going to take quite some time for SAP to become a real true cloud company. And, you know, people don't realize, or I guess they should realize, that, you know, still this vast majority, or at least a significant majority of the revenue, is still coming from licensed software and maintenance and support. So as I think Brian mentioned, that that's a gap when they have to kind of get transition to getting more of the revenue in from the cloud. But they still need to service those on-premises customers. And there are plenty of businesses that really still can't go to the cloud. And there's, you know, as Bartels pointed out, there's still regions where, you know, the cloud infrastructures may not be there yet. So they do have to, you know, rely still on sort of that traditional license mode. So,
and that, you know, Jim, that Forrester analyst that you quoted in your story also just pointed out the sheer brute fact that a lot of SAP's cloud revenue is from Ariba, Fieldglass, right, Concur, mm-hmm, SuccessFactors. It's not from core SAP as such.
No, still, it's not.
Apropos of that, both of you covered the SAP earnings call, another event that happened in, I think it was still late January when that happened.
It was 2 days after the RISE announcement.
Yep. It was full year numbers. And so they did pretty well for a year that could have been horrible because of COVID. So total revenue dropped just 1%, which is a real victory compared to what could have happened. But the numbers that you both reported from the earnings call were that the cloud percentage, that is it's around 30%. So it was up 17%. So the growth was good, up to 8 billion euros. And I did the math with my handy calculator, and that is just under 30% of total revenue, which is it's a better number than in the early years, which tended to be in the low teens. And so you do have to wonder, though, about how things are reported. I know that, for example, Oracle, they, I think, changed how they lump things together, because Oracle is now saying that their cloud service and license support revenues, that's the term they use, is now about 72% of their revenue. Smaller company, but the percentage of their revenue that they claim is cloud is much higher. So it's hard to compare apples to apples.
Yeah, and I think there are different ways that they can sort of hide the cloud revenue too. I think it's very sort of difficult to figure out what's really cloud revenue and what's not. It is interesting, though, that, you know, as Brian pointed out, that a lot of the cloud revenue was derived from their existing cloud properties that are part of the business network, SAP Ariba, Fieldglass, and Concur. And they all had it's a tough time for those businesses in general, because they all sort of depend on times the economy that's taken a big hit, Concur being the most obvious one that's travel on expense. So,
yeah, well, we've not been traveling anywhere.
Nobody's been traveling anywhere. And you know, Ariba is, you know, supply chain and, you know, procurement, and that's taken a hit. Fieldglass is contingent workforce. So there's been a lot of, you know, layoffs and people not bringing in contingent. So a lot of those properties, you know, are definitely not generating the type of revenue that they might have previously. But they're also, you know, they also might be the first ones to sort of come back if the economy starts to generate again. So that growth may be, you know, pretty significant in the next couple of years for that end of the business.
Just for comparison quickly, Oracle's revenue picture is quite similar to SAP's, but I mean, in their Q2, it's just one quarter, but the 2% up year on year was there. I mean, the actual number was 9.8 billion, but that, you know, doesn't really help. It's just the fact that it's 2% up as opposed to 1% down. I mean, that might be an indication of kind of relative performance. The two giants of this space, I don't know, you know, how pleased SAP should be with their numbers. I mean, as a side point, they've had a good pandemic in the sense that they have contributed a lot. You know, the YAP that they did with Deutsche Telekom has been very good. So they have contributed to the fight against COVID-19 in a way that's, we can only congratulate them upon that. The numbers seem a bit kind of, I mean, if we were financial analysts, we'd probably be a bit sort of thinking, well, meh, you know, it's not great.
They certainly have plenty of cash on hand. I mean, and that only increased with their spinoff of Qualtrics, which had its IPO, which I don't know.
This
if you
is
know
the
that.
Other side of the story, isn't it, guys? So I was tempted to ask Jim, when you were talking about ASOG doing the poll survey, whether they use Qualtrics for that.
They did, yes.
Yeah, and we use Qualtrics too at TechTarget for our online surveys. So it's a technology set that's certainly used in anger. But that whole business of divesting it, I mean, I know that SAP is going to be the majority shareholder, but that's very much something that Christian Klein has done, isn't it? That was his big strategic, early strategic move.
If you look at how the shares did jump, as I recall, at the initial public offering, although I don't...
If you look at their graph for the year, it's been up and down. Very, very turbulent year, I think someone else said. Not that we kind of approach things that way, obviously. We're mainly concerned about the users, but...
They made money. They made when... I think they even had it, SAP did in their last financial results, though, that because the initial public offering was considered successful and they're still majority owner, they made some decent money, at least on paper.
Yes, and they will continue to sort of generate revenue from it.
So it does look like a bit of a win-win then all around that.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose the other kind of big change would be, it seems to me, the board of SAP, the high command of SAP, is looking a little bit less Teutonic than it was. You know, they've appointed Julia White, formerly of Microsoft, as Chief Marketing Officer, and also Sabine Bendiek, who is also ex-Microsoft, to the board. You know, it does seem as though the leadership team is changing from the Bill McDermott leadership team that he's beginning to kind of flesh that.
So that's a good point, Brian. I think it's really the sort of the last sort of ushering out of the Bill McDermott people, which was Adair Fox Martin, who had been, on the board and was, an ex-SIPI executive for a number of years. So she's left. And I think it's Christian's team right now. And it's kind of his game, and it'll rise and fall on his people now. So maybe
a bit of a flipping question, but what did you guys make of just circling back to the Rise keynote, presence of Nadella and the whole trumpeting of the deepening of the relationship between SAP and Microsoft vis-a-vis Teams in particular? I mean, how important was that to what was an SAP announcement about Rise to suddenly have this kind of sidecar of an intensified use of Microsoft Teams?
I think it's been talked about for quite some time. From what I understand, is they've been sort of having more engagement between Microsoft in certain areas. They've had announcement that I think of last year that Microsoft Azure was their preferred hyperscaler vendor. So these kinds of integrations have been going on for quite some time. I don't think I'm that surprised that Satya Nadella was part of this announcement. I think these announcements are all sort of involving the other players and these big companies. I think it gives them sort of credibility. It gets them some attention. So I wasn't particularly surprised to see it. I think maybe the Teams part of it, I think maybe in certain response to, Salesforce acquiring Slack recently.
That was what it was possibly mainly about because it was so close.
I think so, yeah. It is interesting, though, that SAP, and I haven't really heard much about this, but they've had their own collaboration platform called SAP Jam for forever.
Yes.
And yeah. I would imagine, I really haven't dug too deeply into it, but I would think if they're integrating Teams more thoroughly into the SAP applications, then whatever they were doing with SAP Jam will sort of go by the wayside. Mm-hmm. That might be another question for another day.
It is interesting to observe these things. There was the kind of tug of love between AWS and Oracle vis-a-vis Zoom last year. Look at the increased importance of Zoom. And, Larry was saying, Zoom running on Oracle, and AWS saying, no, it's still running considerably on AWS. It's interesting to see the way the kind of hyperscalers do fit into this picture vis-a-vis the business application vendors.
In the last couple of minutes, guys, I'm wondering where Rise and just these latest cloud numbers, where they leave SAP in the sort of the big picture in terms of their ongoing effort here to transition to the cloud, like all the vendors really, and also to get adoption of S/4HANA. Do you think this is a pretty major play here and that things are moving along apace?
I think it is. I think it, as I've said before, I think that customers and the analyst community seem pretty positive on it. The early reviews, I think it's going to take time and it's still just an early thing. And not something we got into. We probably could do a whole nother podcast on it. They're depending a lot on the partner community to sort of advance it too and do a lot of that work. So, I think that there's a lot to that. But overall, I think it's not going to hurt.
And in the UK today, I think, or maybe it was yesterday, Accenture acquired an SAP partner called Eden House. So Accenture, showing faith with that, because that's 220 consultants, quite expensive materiel, always they've taken on board. And so, there's clearly some sort of expression of faith, I would say, in that. Yeah, no, it looks, on the surface, it looks clever. And although Christian Klein was a bit reluctant to say, is this a way of speeding off the adoption of S/4HANA in the cloud? He said, yes, it is, but it's pretty fast anyway, was his kind of basic response to that sort of question. It does, seem like a clever way of at least trying to accelerate S/4HANA cloud adoption in particular.
And when I asked about that at the Q&A, he basically emphasized the ongoing customer journey, transformation journey, both the customers and of SAP.
I think that's really the point that I'm trying to get across, is it's more than just moving your systems to S/4HANA. If that's your only, your only goal, that's not really taking the full sort of picture of what the intelligent enterprise can be. So I think they're trying to have a larger question answered.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a fairly attractive proposition for customers who are trying to do, as you say, Jim, more than just kind of move to S/4HANA Cloud, but, you know, ground that in a business value generating case, you know, as a way of doing that conveniently. I can see that being attractive. But, you know, I suppose we do still have to remember that, you know, on the ground, there are customers who would simply prefer to go for a third-party support option like Rimini Street for ECC. My colleague Cliff Sarin recently published a story for us in Computer Weekly about Nottinghamshire County Council and how basically, very bluntly, the lady he spoke to there said there was just no viable business case for S4 and that they prefer to save themselves £100,000 or so a year by going with Rimini Street, or rather that's what they were spending on patching the SAP system. And presumably Rimini Street are not doing this for nothing. You know, but I think their value proposition is what, half, we'll do it for half or something like that. So out there are still plenty of SAP customers who are wedded to the older ERP. They don't see a business case at all for the shift to S/4HANA. And they will pursue other options.
That's a good reality check. Always good to get a reality check from the end users and customers. And that's probably a good spot to end it. Thanks for listening. Stick around for my interview with Holger Mueller of Constellation Research. And I want to thank you again, Jim and Brian, for another great conversation.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Jim.
What is your overall opinion of RISE with SAP Service?
Overall, it's good, right? So software vendors who have to support too many different versions of their software getting spread thin, even at the scale of an SAP, right? So they have to figure out, why do their customers not move to the latest software? How can they sweeten that deal? How can they move forward with that, right? And that's basically attempt and push from that perspective. I think that that's a positive. The big billion-dollar question, of course, is, has SAP sweetened the deal enough for the adoption to happen in 2021, right? And the big concern for me is this is not the right time to speak to most companies about this. I categorize the companies in three segments in the COVID world, right? There's the super busy ones, the essential businesses. They're definitely not going to upgrade their ERP solution, right? So nothing of that's going to happen. Then there's the stutterers, the on-off, regionally different and so on. They also don't have the appetite. They have to accelerate their processes. They might be able to do something like this. And then the worst part are the sidelined ones like the airlines, which don't even know what their business model is, right? They don't even know if they're going to operate like this, right? They might need a smaller ERP solution for the future of the company, right? So I think even if SAP got the most attractive no-brainer offer, which I certainly don't have right now, they wouldn't see a lot of adoption, unfortunately, at least in the first half of 2021.
Yeah. How confident are you that the whole effort is put together? Because there's a lot of moving parts of RISE. Have you heard whether they really have them in place, or they have a near-term timeline where they're going to have it all in place this year?
Well, it all starts in sales, right? And they're sorting out and figuring out who's going to lead this, right? And if it's going to be led by one person or whatever. So it's early. I think they wanted to get in the books early to accommodate some customers. So there might have been some signings early anyway, which they can put under the RISE banner to show traction of that. So it's not only the overall economic situation with the pandemic going on, which is not very favorable for them. It's the overall situation, which I think will not help them to get too many things done early, I would say. But I'm happy to be wrong, because, like I said, it's a good thing to see if the SAP customer base is moving to the latest version, where there's a lot of innovation benefits for them. They get more value out of the SAP implementation.
What do you think is SAP's main purpose of doing this? I know we can't read people's minds and maybe attribute motivation to them, but it seems like there's a number of reasons why they might be doing this. Do you have any theories or information on what their motivation is?
It's a theory. They want S/4HANA adoption, right? S/4HANA cloud adoption, not S/4HANA premise adoption, right? The writing of that is totally clear. There's nothing, as I said, there's nothing wrong with that, right? So if you build something, there's nothing more expensive for the software vendor to have multiple platforms and not have customers using the latest greatest, right? And SAP is on this long haul, and we know that haul takes a long time, right? We used to speak at Open Worlds in person, remember? It took Oracle 10 years, right? And the fascinating thing to me is how SAP and Oracle are on these totally separate cycles on the product side, right? So Fusion was announced in 2004, S/4HANA announced in 2014. Now, SAP might be all proud. I can make fun of Germans being German, right? That they have the better engineering, they're more efficient and so on. So maybe it takes SAP 8 years. That would be 2022 to a functional equivalency and parity, right? And that is what's really holding customers back. That they want to make sure that everything they could be running in their ECC R3 instance is running in S4HANA. Now, SAP is a very good point in saying you don't want to run all this because it's old best practices, that's old capabilities. You don't need this, you don't want this. But that's where everybody's saying, yeah, but I want to be in charge of that, right? Of course, I take something better, but if I need what I'm running right now, please make that sure that that is running there as well. Something new, which I don't want to go yet there yet. Where's the value for me in this? But that's the dirty secret of all of enterprise software, that maintenance is super profitable and fuels the new innovation. That's the idea of the contract by itself. But those are the two components which SAP has to get right. And that's what customers get or see. And all the partner things are like the enablers for that, right? I mean, it's good to see the partners on board. I am disappointed to a certain point by all the system integrators of not having the ROI calculators and the methodology and the reasons where to go, right? So it's a very interesting thing that partners, for whatever reason, are sitting this out. But again, the pandemic, right? The partners have to figure out a new way of implementing things, right? The typical a conference room glass bowl implementation, right? Booked for a year, and I can pull in everybody easily, and you can walk and see how things are really done if it's at headquarters and everything is centrally done and so on. That's not going to work anymore, right? So, and then they're also slow, and now we change topics here, right? The system integrator information, they're very slow to realize the new normal because it's so disruptive to their energy, to their business model of putting bodies in planes from Monday to Thursday, right? So that's not helping at the moment right now. But I would love to see in general for the software industry, because product development goes on. There's tremendous new innovation, which is right now sitting on the shelves, if you want. It's not being implemented because a traditional implementation vehicle, the system integrators, is kind of like saying, huh, are we going to go back to flying, getting bodies out there to the kaching model on premises? Or do we have to find newer, different ways where our consultants work from home and that's figured out? And here's our implementation, our way to success. And this is the problem of it, right? Probably going to pay a little less, right? Going to get a little less revenue, right? I mean, travel expenses for a typical consulting company are a sizable 10-15% of the revenue, of the float, right? And that goes away. So explain that to your investors, right?
Didn't SAP say that, maybe I'm thinking of a different number, that there would be like a 20% savings in doing it this way to the customer? So I know we're talking about SAP's revenue here, but if there's... Right. Money for the customer, maybe they're sort of losing money on their end.
Yeah, so SAP is losing money from that perspective, right? Because they allow the customer to move as maintenance revenue to subscription revenue, which is less valuable and less guaranteed than the other part. And if they move the license and usage for that, it's going to be a different dynamic. But on the flip side, we all know why does SAP desperately say, let's go to S4HANA. It's not just, well, I said nicely, having too much my engineering hat on, right? Let's put the finance hat on and say, yeah, valuation is on cloud revenues and subscription revenues, which they desperately want and need to boost, which had their reassessment last year, right? After with the downturn, which they took a beating in the markets for that reason, right? So, which was super, super honest from their side. They can still completely do their dip by people traveling less and Concur having less revenue. And so, yeah, 200 million missed because of Concur not traveling in Q2, Q3. Everybody understands that, right? So, and you might have to reset the Concur business, like the whole travel industry has to reset, right? I don't know if I think SAP is a less valuable company for that, right? You can ask in the first place, why do they have Concur, right? But that's all paid off and part of that already, right? Mm-hmm. Spend management is an important thing for companies. It just has to be reset on a level, and who knows when travel will be back at that level, right?
Yeah. So they really were hurt in that regard because, you know, customers seem to be moving to cloud ERP, but they're not using something like Concur, as you say, because it's so travel centric. So,
yeah, well, you only make money in Concur if people travel, right? If people don't travel, it's not there. I was just saying from investor relations perspective, I don't know if they've been so smart, and I'm giving kudos for being honest and saying, look, we have to reset this because we know there's some sand in the S4HANA. To cloud upgrade machinery. Kudos for being honest, but they could have fixed things a little more in time and acceptably blame it on the slowdown on the cloud revenue coming from Concur, which is fair enough, right? Any US company would have done it, right? It's only the Germans who are honest. No, just kidding. But I asked like a bunch of CFOs and even some German CFOs said, I have no idea why they did that. But yeah, to make it lesson learned for Christian Klein and his team. But on the flip side, Luka Mucic is there since decades, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, so he had probably some
input. But SAP has a history of saying, look, we want to reset this curve, right? Kagerman did this, Plattner did this of saying, look, we're going to put more into R&D, we're going to listen more to customers, we lower our profitability goals, and so on. So SAP has a history and tradition of giving itself some breathing space and accepting short-term share price reductions for long-term planability. Right? And that's what it ultimately comes from, managed expectations.
Yeah. Earlier, you mentioned Oracle. 2.5 years ago, I checked the record here. They came out with SOAR, sort of a striking similarity in phrasing there. So in some ways, it looks like SAP kind of responding to what Oracle seemed to be doing, trying to get people to Oracle ERP Cloud, now called Oracle Cloud ERP. And, you know, and they often brag about, Oracle does, about how we have the database, we have all this cloud infrastructure. And the announcement, like with the business technology platform, and the announcement as it was packaged by SAP reminded me a lot of what Oracle says, you know, saying, okay, if you're going to do this, we've got the database, we've got PaaS and IaaS, and we've got all these wonderful cloud systems. It just reminded me a little bit of, not a little bit, like a lot of the SAP version of what Oracle offered in SOAR.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Absolutely, right? Both are upgrade programs trying to entice the install base to move to a new problem. The big fundamental difference is that Oracle has this thing called Applications Unlimited, where they say that their customers will get and have a continued roadmap to stay on the acquired products, including eBusiness Suite, PeopleSoft, Siebel, JD Edwards, and so on, right? And that has been very, very successful. It has taken a lot of wind out of the sails, right? But it has taken also a lot of pressure out for Oracle by saying you have to upgrade by that time, right? Let's remember for SAP, quickly back to them, they had a hard cut over, which they extended again, right? That you can't force your customers to implement something you don't want, because if you do that, they might look at something else, right? So Oracle doesn't have that push for customers, which is good that they have the choice. And it's surprising and shocking sometimes to see how many PeopleSoft customers are there. And even 2021, people are still implementing PeopleSoft from scratch, showing that Oracle has gained the trust of them to run this for the next 5, 6, 7 years, and is showing value from not just from a compliance, keeping the lights on perspective, but from putting in capabilities, new capabilities. And there's a roadmap, right? So, and Oracle has a great addition to it, right? The first product they've done this was the acquisition of the database of RDB from Digital in 1989 or 1990. And guess what? RDB is still running today. So which is a lesson learned for people listening. If your boat is big enough relative to the vendor, so for SAP and Oracle, if you look around, there's 1,000 people on your release, your maintenance stream not only makes sure that the lights are on, if you only have lights on, you're going to get a little shortchanged. You have to organize yourself through the user groups and say, I want to have a roadmap. I want to have capabilities coming from you. It might not be as much as the bigger boat where there's 20,000 customers or something like this. We understand that. That is more money for you to build stuff from a maintenance or subscription perspective. But around 1,000, that's a critical number. If you dip below that, then it's time to look for alternatives or to upgrade.
The other day, I watched the webcast of Oracle CFO Live, and Larry Ellison was live from Lanai, and he repeated a claim. Larry Ellison, of course, the CTO and founder of Oracle. He repeated something I've heard him say many times before at Open World and at earnings calls. This is pretty much a direct quote. He said, SAP doesn't really have a cloud ERP system. They really have not rewritten their ERP system for the cloud. Is that even fair for him to say?
Yeah, well, SAP has not rewritten from line one like Oracle has a Fusion, right? From that perspective, from his vantage point, that's a fair enough point, right? SAP has moved code assets, which they think are relevant, necessary, over, which are still in ABAP. And ABAP itself is not the language of the cloud, right? It doesn't have that scalability. They're very compatible both in the way how they solve tenancy, right? So every customer is in their own tenant database, may it be HANA or an Oracle version, which is, by the way, the right architecture. The old multi-tenancy conversation that Salesforce and other first-generation cloud vendors was the right solution 20 years ago is not the right solution today, because you can't move and port the database. You can't use standard BI tools to look at it and so on. So interestingly, behind the scenes, they're very, very, they agree on that from that perspective. But Larry is to a large point right. There's been simplifications. But it's fundamentally the same code which is running there. And now you can, of course, debate what is cloud. If you ask me, cloud is elasticity. Can you ramp up and ramp down in terms of the consumption and the footprint of the solution?